but we go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, where Jed Wills had said he made a business decision earlier this year not to play. And we'll ask John Greco about that, who's a former Cleveland Browns offensive lineman and a current analyst. He appears on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ken and Anthony. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Did you actually hear the clip about the business decision?
I did, and I have to be honest, I had a few people send me the clip. I think it was from Mary Kay, and at first I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a meme. I thought it was a McNeil meme that I love so much on X. And then I actually listened, and I said, you know, whoa. It took me a few seconds to collect my thoughts and you know, kind of react to it. But, yeah, I did see it. I did hear his words and what he had to say, and what do you got?
Well, I do want to play it for everybody in case some other people didn't hear it. Here is Jed Wills. This is with the question, if I'm not mistaken, with the question about the quote-unquote business decision to not play against the Ravens.
I mean, you'd started the first 57 games every time you were healthy.
Yeah.
So how shocking was this to not?
It was pretty shocking. I mean, I decided myself that I made a business decision not to play after the Bengals game going into that Ravens game because I was injured. And then the next week is when I received the news. So, I mean,
do you think that they misinterpreted the business decision?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I mean, John, everywhere I go to and everything I've learned about football is like this is one of the ultimate insults that you can say. And he said it about himself.
Yeah. So, guys, the term business decision has been used since, you know, people started putting actual face masks on helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of a joke. It was just like, you know, you'd see a guy get beat or you'd see a guy out on the field on tape do something where it looked like he was giving minimal effort. And in the film room, we used to be like, jokingly, oh, this guy's making a business decision. I mean, every position group says it since the beginning of time, since I first started playing football. And to hear a guy actually say it, to actually say it about himself, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. So, look, obviously Jed's dealing with some injuries and, you know, he gets it. He's trying to set himself up for his next chapter, whatever that is, whether it's with the Browns or a different team. I'm not going to speculate on that right now, but I just wouldn't have gone that route. I wouldn't have said those things. If you're medically cleared by the team and the team says, no, you're healthy enough to go out there, and for you to say that, I was just shocked. I can't imagine ever playing, especially offensive line, and hearing a fellow teammate, a guy in the room, say that and voluntarily hold out of a game for whatever reason. I was just a little bit taken back and surprised by it, guys.
Yeah, John, I heard the exchange. Everything that was said around it, and we were all stunned. We were all sitting there speechless when we first started sending this to each other, and we just couldn't believe it. At the same time, the more I listened to it, it sounded like somebody who has lost all confidence, already knows he's struggling when healthy, and feels like going out there when he's not healthy is just a recipe for disaster all the way around. So what do the Browns do with that information if they perceive it to be the same way that I do?
Yeah, and that's a great question, Anthony. And obviously the Browns have made their decision and made their lineup change and move by benching him. So if that's the case, if he's worried about poor play because of an injury, then maybe he should seek a second opinion and go see a doctor or somebody outside of the Browns staff, because if they are clearing him and he's still not ready to play, or if he thinks he's hurt, then he should shut it down or at least get a medical opinion that says that. And I don't know, put him on IR. Because are we going to play this game each week where it's like, you know, if somebody that's in the lineup that actually gets hurt or dinged and he's out there, can the team rely on that to help them win? You know, I don't know. You have a guy that's on the roster now that's in that room that everybody in the room knows. Well, you know, he's not healthy enough to start, but in a pinch when we have to rely on him, if it's a close game and somebody's, you know, shoe falls off and he has to go in on a third down and, and we have to rely on him to pick up a blitz, is he going to be ready to do that? So all of these things are going through everyone's mind in that room, and Kevin Stefanski, and you know, everybody's got to think, you know, can we rely on this guy to go in there when his number's called and execute? I don't know. And if for him, yes, he's got a lot going on. He hears the outside noise, how he's been criticized, and rightfully so. So, yeah, he's thinking about his immediate future and what that might look like. But I just don't think that was the right thing to say and the right way to go about it. You know, behind closed doors, tell the trainers, you know, I'm just not ready. What can we do? Can you know, work with me here? I just don't feel like I'm ready to go out there that I can give my best effort and performance. But to say those things, those choice of words, my gosh, I thought it was a bad look.
Is there a level of resentment with his teammates?
I can't speculate on that, Ken. I know if it was me, I think just behind closed doors, everybody is sharing the same thing. Like I just can't believe that was said. Now, you know, everybody's going to show up to work and still be buddy-buddy with them, and life's going to, you know, go on. But I would have to think at some point a little bit. That's just human nature to think that way. But, I mean, my God, everybody else is banged up. Everybody else is playing hurt, you know, and they're making business decisions of playing hurt and staying in there and riding this thing out. It's 2-7. Of course, guys can shut it down, but they're making business decisions and staying in there and playing. You know, maybe they're not 100%. Maybe what they're putting out there on tape isn't their best. But my God, they're still out there giving it their all because they signed up for it, and that's what we do as football players.
Is there ever a time where, as a player, you would be hoping that the doctors would make you inactive for a game? Because that's what it sounded to me, was like he was surprised one week that he was active given his injuries.
Yeah, I see, that's the thing, Anthony. Injuries, it's such a gray area. I mean, you know, there's the obvious ones that's like, no, you're out. I mean, it is what it is. Now, things like this where, you know, your knee feels unstable, or, you know, these hamstring injuries, these soft tissue injuries that really only the player knows his body best, obviously. But these doctors get paid for a reason, and, I mean, it's just medicine and science. Like, you look at it, and you're like, you watch the guy move during the pregame warm-ups or a practice during his rehab, and you're watching him move, and it's like, you know, can he be effective on Sundays, yes or no? I feel like that's a black-and-white answer. A pretty cut and dry answer. So, you know, have I ever seen that? No. It's always been the case where it's like, you know, your body, you go out there and you test it. You say, hey, my knee's banged up. It's swollen. Let's drain the thing. Let me go out there and move. Hey, I'm moving pretty well. I can play. Or it just doesn't look right. It doesn't look good. And you all mutually agree that, like, no, I'm not putting myself and the team in the best situation. But this, it seems like no one's on the same page, and I'm just struggling to know why that is.
What is the level of trust between players and doctors when it comes to a team? You know, I want to be sensitive to the parties involved here to a degree, because, I mean, you go back to Trent Williams. I mean, he went after Washington some years ago and threatened to never play again and wanted to file a lawsuit and a lot of other things. I mean, but he was dealing with obviously something very serious. Is there an ever growing gap, do you think, between players and organizations?
I don't think so, Ken. I mean, these guys are medical professionals and there's a whole big staff of them, and you have different opinions and you have different guys you can see. And the NFL Players Union has made it very easy that you can deal with your agent and seek a second opinion. So that option is available. And that's why – and that protects against, you know, something like this from happening. So if you think that there's something going on and there's a disagreement between you and the medical staff and the doctors on the team, then absolutely you should go seek a second opinion, because those guys aren't perfect. They're only looking at the data that they're seeing from MRIs, from x-rays, from, you know, examining the injury spots and the areas, and they're, you know, getting their heads together. But, you know, everyone's entitled to seek a second opinion. So is there a lack of trust? I don't think so. At the end of the day, does everybody want to hear what they want to hear? Probably. But if you go in and, you know, the doctors and the surgeons and the trainers are saying, you know, yeah, that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you structurally. Are you sore? Of course. Is there fluid? Is there swelling? Of course. But everybody's got that. So that's when you just have to seek a second opinion, get the answer that you want, that you're looking for, and then I guess shut it down.
John Greco joining us, former Browns guard, current analyst. Za'Darius Smith, that trade, Robert Mays from The Athletic, he called it a, quote, soft reset. Would you rather, if you were the Browns, would you rather reset or tear it down and rebuild?
You know, guys, obviously, as you know, I've been a part of a lot of soft resets, full resets, medium resets, you know, every year it felt like. I'm in the opinion that if you know that you have a solid foundation and structure and you think that you can, you know, you're two or three pieces away from flipping the switch, then I think you should do that. But sometimes things happen and it requires a full reset. Now, you know, I don't know the Browns specifically. You see teams every year that go from worst to first, and it's like, my God, they made like three moves, and if it can work for them, why can't it work for us? So I don't know what a full, you know, reset means. You know, does that mean you fire every staff member, every coach, every player, but four or five players or young players? I don't know, but I think it's kind of picking and playing with key positions, getting some veterans in, which they have, obviously. This is one of the oldest older rosters with obviously high paid. But I think that there's a way to kind of say, look, who's going to be here for the next few years while this window hopefully is still somewhat open. But we have to make some changes. So I don't know what that looks like. Soft reset, moving one guy to a team that's going to be fighting for a championship. I don't know. I don't know if I'd necessarily say that. I think they were just trying to trade any capital they had to try to get some picks. But, you know, I'm hoping that if these guys are around next year, that, and when I say these guys, Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, hopefully that they can architect a way to pull a couple guys in that changes the face of this team and roster that catapults them into a contender.
Browns fan cruise coming up in March. I believe you are going. John, can you tell us about it?
Yes, absolutely. I went last year in the inaugural fan cruise, and I didn't know what to expect, guys, and it was a blast. You know, seeing guys that I used to play with, watching Browns greats that I, you know, grew up watching, interacting with them and hanging out with them on the ship for a week and on the beach and all of the destinations, spots that we stopped at. But really just seeing the fans and connecting with them on a different level. Because when you play, it's like here, you know, yes, I'd love to sign this. I'd love to take a picture with your grandson or your kid or you or whatever. Hey, this is going up at your local VFW. That's terrific. That's awesome. But it always feels rushed. This was kind of a chance to slow it down, to connect with fans on a different level. And we would have dinner with them. They would ask intuitive questions. It wasn't just like, hey, did you play with Johnny Manziel? It was really fans asking and connecting. And they're smart, guys. They knew, you know, the second year I played, how, you know, they would ask questions about that season. And the fifth year I played, ask questions about that season. You know, really just taking the time to connect with fans on a different level and competing against one another and with fans. And it gives the fans a chance to connect with one another. And it's a small world, guys. You know, we were in Jamaica and you meet a guy and, oh, hey, I'm from Youngstown. My daughter went to Poland. My daughter went to Boardman. Graduated a year behind you. So it was just a great opportunity to connect with different generations of Browns players and fans that have been around fans their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. John, it's wonderful. We thank you very much. Can we ever cruise with John, Tone?
Where do you want to go?
Boca. Wait a minute. That's in the States, right? Belize. What about Belize, Tone? Where's that at? Is that around here?
Do Belize?
We'll do Belize. I think I've actually
do Colombia, but
I think I've actually. Well, you know, I mean, you know, it's not what it used to be, from what I hear.
That was a ski trip. Not a cruise.
John, thank you very much for the time. All the best to you and yours. We'll talk to you again next week.
Guys, thank you. Have a good week.
Thank you. John Greco on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You just want to cut Jed Wills? I still say no.
I guess. Cut him.
Okay. Well, never mind.
Well, the problem is they're 2-7. We've all kind of agreed that, okay, send a message so other guys don't quit in a 2-7 year. Like, I think it just boils down to, do you have enough guys left to play offensive line if you don't have them?
Probably not. And the other thing is I know everybody's mad. Everybody's going to rip on Jed Wills, as they already are, and they're probably going to rip on him even harder. I bet you're going to get a hell of an effort out of him. Right? He's a proud man. We're not going to get a good effort out of him?
After this?
Got to be a proud man, don't you? After this, it seems like you're going to get a hell of an effort. I mean, he has put it out there publicly now.
So do you think the Ole blocking that he's been doing this season, not to mention last season or the season before, is going to change now because he came out and said, well, I was making a business decision?
It is. It has a better chance to change after him saying a business decision than before.
How?
Because he's going to be ridiculed as he is right now.
He's been ridiculed for four years. Why would he care now?
But there was understanding before. Now there's no understanding. There would be some people who would understand
how he didn't try on blocks.
I started out trying
to. For the last season, especially.
Well, I tried to understand before.
Thank you, Porky.
You're welcome. I tried to understand before, and now I can't. So I pointed out that if you lose him, I don't say lose. If you were to cut him, you're just going to. How much longer do you think Jack Conklin's going to hold up?
I don't have a lot of faith in that.
Do you want to try him? Okay. So this is it.
I might have more faith that Jed Wills is going to try when he gets back on the field than Jack Conklin holding up.
Okay. So Jed Wills, I know you guys are all mad at him, but think about it this way. Does DeJuan Jones feel like he's a nice left tackle for you? And around the room, think about this. Yeah?
Potentially,
yes. I'm hopeful.
Yes.
Some things I'm worried about, but I'm hopeful.
Well, of course, there's things we all worry about. We worry about monsters under the stairs. So it seems that he might be a potential left tackle for you. So by the time that Jack Conklin goes down, and Jack Conklin's doing a good job, but we know that usually he goes down. Would it not make sense that Jed Wills gets a shot over at right tackle, his what is supposed to be, quote-unquote, natural position? Maybe we misplaying him here the whole time. We were misplaying DeJuan Jones, even though DeJuan Jones had said to me, after a game, point blank, he is not going to play in left tackle. But you know what? Sometimes you're just called into service, my good young man. Like, maybe that is the case.
This has just been broken from the start of the year. I mean, from early on, we could not believe the stuff we were hearing. Like, is he ever going to be ready to go this year? This is his contract year. What do guys do in contract years?
Usually
they
show
ball
play well.
Out. Absolutely.
And
no,
not him.
No, he was late to the party.
Yes,
to even start out the year. Then when he played, he wasn't good. Then, of course, he got re-injured. Now there's a big disagreement over his injuries because basically the way he made it seem like yesterday, without being very critical of the team, but kind of sounded like he was going that direction, was, I've not been healthy. Why are they making me play? I'm not healthy. And then it's the NFL. Lots of guys are not healthy.
Well, you
and
seem
playing.
To just like you've given. Have other people just given up on any sort of concept? 216-474-0092. Like, this is weird. He comes out and he says it's a business decision, and a lot of people are like, yeah, figured it out. Figured it anyway, so what the hell? Like, there's so many people who just, like, they don't care. Like, they care, but
they're actually more glad that he said it was a business decision than him saying, oh, no, guys, I've really been trying hard, and I just suck at football.
Well, yeah, you're looking for a reason that he hasn't been good. I just go back to what I said when Baker was going through stuff that was similar. When I was like, man, if I were Baker's agent, I would be pulling him, telling him not to play. And so I'm trying to just remember, I did say all those things with Baker. Now am I supposed to reverse courses because I don't like Jed and how he plays for us?
Well, there's a difference between your left tackle and your quarterback.
And your quarterback, because one guy does affect the entire offense. The other one, you can, even though it's hard to replace him, you can find a replacement for him. And the other part of it is that, and it was brought up by Jared Luganbill, who listens to the show, who does a lot of recruiting in all of Northeast Ohio. And you can hear, this is brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. There you go. That he had sat out that final game against the Bengals. And that certainly soured a lot of people. It's like, well, wait a minute. Now that we're like out of it, you're just going to sit down?
Yeah.
Like, that's it? So either you're going to play and you're going to play or not. Like, it's going to rub people the wrong way.
Wait, you guys pointed out, I want to explore that real quick. You pointed out a difference there, Owen, between a quarterback and a left tackle. The reason I said it with Baker was, first, Baker was not the same player. He was injured. He was not good. I thought it would be better for the team if he didn't play. I thought it would be better for Baker if he didn't play. Well, Jed hasn't been really... It's been a couple of years since he has been even adequate at left tackle.
But I think there was something that was different here. And I think that we're getting to something that I can't really go and speculate on other than what he just said. With Baker, you could see and you heard and all the reports were there. There was something that was structurally wrong with his arm. There was something that was structurally wrong with him. And because he is not a big body quarterback who can just let it fly. Even though, would you see that play on Bosa?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He held him off with one
arm. Holy cow. That was one of the best plays I've ever seen in my life. I know they still lost that game, but holy Toledo, was that a great play. He is a guy who needs his whole body to have torque on a pass. And if he can't, which he didn't, there was going to be problems there. So, yeah, at the time, you beg and plead because you didn't want things to go worse, because I don't think that you wanted to give up on what was going on there. I really don't think you did. I didn't think that you felt, and I'm starting to assign some thoughts that maybe you had or hadn't. I don't think that you felt that that was a situation we were going to get from altogether. I mean, they can go down there, and you and I knew that they were snooping around Houston, seeing what could possibly be done, seeing any background stuff that they could make, but you didn't think that that was really, truly going to happen. So it's like, all right, how do we salvage this going on? Well, he sits out the rest of the year. He physically can't do it. We thought we had our out against Arizona when he took that shot with, was it J.J. Watt who got him? And we thought, well, oh my gosh, that's got to be it. I mean, Lord Almighty. And then he kept playing, and he kept playing up until the Pittsburgh game when that was the last time we saw him in a Browns uniform. If you're saying that you're talking, like you said, for him to sit, I do think it's a lot different where there's something structurally wrong here. The other guy, I'm not hearing that there's something structurally, quote-unquote, wrong.
Jed did say, he said there was still some stuff going on from last year.
Bone bruise and things like that.
Yeah, so, not as bad as the necessarily the Baker stuff.
So is he alleging that the doctors would put him out there against his own better judgment?
He a couple times was like, he's like, but they cleared me. Like, he was kind of sitting there, kind of sounding like he didn't want to be cleared. Which, that brings us again to the same, negative overall about him as a football player, especially guys that are going to be injured, because, you know, we're going to compare him to the guy he replaced. Well, Joe Thomas, we know for years was playing with all sorts of stuff and structural stuff, and he played and he played and he played. The difference was he was still all-pro level. He was still Hall of Fame level with those injuries. Jed hasn't been that without the injuries, and with the injuries, it's only gotten worse.
It just does seem to be. It seems like I've made an argument against myself to keep him on the football team. But it does seem to be our luckers going, the second you were to just cut him, which, by the way, nobody seems to be, if they were 7-2 and he was saying that, I think some people would be really upset. I don't think there's as many people upset as I thought there would be. I think a lot of people are going, yeah, par for the course. We've seen guys quit before, and he's quitting on us.
If there wasn't a DeJuan Jones who we saw start all year last year
that
on the
too.
Other side,
that too.
Would we be as upset?
But does it or does it not seem to be the moment you were to cut him, all of a sudden something bad would happen with Jack Conklin? And then who am I got playing right tackle over there? Am I going to stick Michael Dunn over there?
Well, and then this is the hard part. I think it'd be worse than what Jed has been this year, because you want to evaluate DTR eventually. I'm assuming DTR is going to be quarterback.
Well, Jed brought up,
do I need to see DTR?
Him 70% versus somebody else at 100%. We can play that.
And at some point,
I mean, you wouldn't want to go out there and put forth, you know, 70% of your effort while you're injured, and then you have somebody else who go out there and give 100. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be out there the whole time, like, thinking about my knee. I got to focus on my assignment and who I'm blocking. So, like you said, in the past with high ankles, I played and I didn't play as good. So, why would I do the same thing, you know, risking a worse knee injury?
Okay, there is a little bit of logic there.
Oh, I see the logic.
Yeah,
I understand
it. He's a first-round
pick. We just don't want our football players, especially our first-round picks, to be that logical.
Yeah, but so
we want them just to go out and play and shut up and don't make excuses and don't talk injuries, because all these guys, we know how many guys are injured in the NFL week to week.
But Joe Hayden was a first-round pick, and Joe Hayden said either you, because remember people got mad with him because he sat out a game against Antonio Brown. He's like, listen, guys, you can either run with Antonio or you can't run with Antonio. So if you stuck him out there and he's got to cover Antonio Brown, which sometimes it just didn't even matter because, boy, of all the guys he was able to cover, Antonio Brown just had his number. But either way, if you wanted to put him out there at 60%, he ain't going to be able to catch up. You're going to be twice at Joe Hayden because of that. So there was, as crazy as it seems, there is logic. I do think, though, when you go back to the offensive lineman thing, it's the thing I fight about all the time. is I think people just look at him as, hey, these are big guys, and so we can just put them anywhere we want. Where it's like, no, steps are different. You're going up against the greatest pass rushers of, I mean, if they're in this generation, guys, or the greatest pass rushers of all time, you have so many things that you have to worry about when it comes to your footwork. What he does say does make sense. But because of his track record, it's like, nah, to hell with him. Get him out of here. And I'm just thinking, the second you got rid of the guy, you know what would happen. You know what would happen. And I still got a season to get through. And if you want to put DTR out there, I need all the healthy linemen I can get.
I guess I'd rather see him on the sidelines than Olay in blocks.
Yeah, you could leave him on the sidelines. And if Jack Conklin,
oh, maybe I was going to hurt my knees.
And if Jack Conklin doesn't get hurt, because, I mean, this seems to be far beyond driven. You're not going to put him out there at right tackle and all of a sudden go, oh, hey, I'm going to give him a nice contract as a right tackle.
Do we have to ask him every time he trots out there and replacing Jack Conklin? Yeah. Maybe, you know, go, how do you feel right now, Jed?
Yeah, that ain't going
to
happen.
Tackle, to your 10th overall pick.
Do you feel like you're going to be able to go the whole time, or you're going to be thinking about your thumb?
I'm not saying stick him out there to see if there's going to be some sort of a, oh, my goodness, he's a right tackle and we can invest in him. The investment's done. After what he said yesterday, that is done. He is gone after this season. And I think he's resigned himself to that. But the thought of just having a guy go down and having to replace him with another person seems to be that type of luck that we have.
If you've gone up and down the roster before the year started and said, which guy would say this?
You'd probably pick him.
We would have picked Jed Wells.
Yeah. Cavs are 12-0.
Can you imagine if I said that? It's only 12 games. I mean, I'm just trying to get ridiculed.
He's allowed to say it.
He's allowed to say it.
Yeah.
Because he knew it like yesterday. Yesterday was a game where from the moment the game started, I almost wonder if some guys in the pregame shoot-around were like, oh, I don't know if I have it tonight. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And then Donovan is like, well, you know what? I've kind of been sitting back here watching you guys all do it. I'm going to put my stamp on this game. And he did from moment one yesterday. And then they carried it out. They had some... They had some down moments because you're on the road. NBA game, you just lose games all the time where you're on the road. And then who stepped up? Caris LeVert, Ty Jerome, Niang. I mean, they all had their moments yesterday. It was awesome. And then Darius, Eastern Conference Player of the Week, in the final 2 minutes, got a mismatch, went to the bucket, finished, got fouled, game over.
So there's something else that's starting tonight. And it's not just a 12-game winning streak that continues to go. Like, the Cavs have started out fantastic, and they have a game tomorrow night at Philadelphia, 7:30, which, again, is not the same type of matchup that we thought it was going to be to start the season, but what the hell. The in-season tournament, now called the NBA Cup, starts tonight. Now, last year, kind of like, whatever. And I agree with you with what you said at the beginning of the show and what we said last year. It should count for something for the future. It's not like it's an exhibition game. It's not the All-Star game. It should count for something in the future. The winner of the in-season tournament or the NBA Cup, I don't know what they should get in terms of future seeding. Do they get a number one overall? Do they get a home? Is that it? Like, do they always have home court advantage? And wherever they play, like, what do you say? Like, is it a first-round bye? I'm not sure. But they should play for something. But there were higher ratings for those games than there were the year before. So it seems like it's not going away. Now, we panned it, but we didn't really think that we were going to win it last year. Cavs are 12-0. NBA Cup, we could win the NBA Cup. Do you think about the NBA Cup differently now? Because I'm going to take it to another line.
I mean, I haven't. I haven't really up to this point. It's something that I defended as a way to break up the monotony of the NBA. But I also said at the same time, no one's going to care about this for probably 3 years. It's going to take people seeing this year after year, and then the teams have to take some pride in it. The Lakers took some pride in it, and they got ridiculed. But if the teams start to buy in, then their fans will buy in.
Well, I think that was because of just how they finished. If they would have finished better, like, I don't think they would have got ridiculed, but it was like, man, what did LeBron leave it all out there for? Because then he was, like, out of gas by the end of the year, and they were out of gas by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So if you win the NBA Cup, which is fine, the banner gets brought up. Now, you have made an argument to take down Nate Thurman's banner to the point where a lot of people agree with you. Look at you just laughing as I say it? Because how just ridiculous such a
funny thing. If someone is just tuning in now at 8:48 and they hear that, they're like, what?
What did Nate Thurman do?
What if somebody made an argument?
Because if you were to say that, you would think that Nate Thurman did something horrific in his life.
No.
That's, it's like, that banner's got to come down. Why's the banner got to come down? He only played here for 2 years.
Averaged 5 points a game.
And he averaged 5 points a game when he averaged 15 points a game for the rest of his career. Like, what did you say we got? We got the ghost of Nate Thurman. Yeah. We got the third version of Nate Thurman. And it does seem to be, because now that you've had, before LeBron, it's like, all right, you got Doherty there. Doherty was great. Career hampered by injury. You got Price. You got Z. But then, like, Bingo Smith. Why am I drawing up? Larry Nance. Okay. Those are nice. But now you got LeBron. I mean, that's all there needs to be said. LeBron, Kyrie will go up. Kevin Love will go up. People have made the argument for Tristan Thompson. I say, why the hell not? Donovan will probably go up at this clip if he stays here for any modicum of time. So what does that do with the Nate Thurman banner? When Nate Thurman was on this radio station before he passed away and said point blank he was rooting for Golden State during those series. And I thought, you know what? I fought you on this because you have to find something. Once it goes up, it doesn't come down. This would be the situation I go, all right, you win the in-season tournament. You win the NBA Cup. You put the NBA Cup banner up there. You take down Nate Thurman's. You don't throw it away. Don't throw it away. Don't cut it up and sell it for memorabilia. You put it over. You don't give the number out again. No, there's no number 42 out there again, right? Just take it and put it over at the new facility. At their new, like, how many square feet is it?
A billion.
A billion square feet. You just take it and you put it over at the new facility. Huh? Is anybody going to... Is the Thurman family going to be upset?
I don't think anybody would complain.
Do you think anybody would be mad?
No.
They're 12-0 to start the year. It's a nice season. The cup, I'll tell you what, the cup is an attractive cup. It's an attractive trophy. You get that trophy. Say you win it. It's like, all right, the NBA Cup trophy goes, or the NBA Cup banner goes up there. You take down the Nate Thurman banner. Would anybody notice if we weren't talking about it on the radio?
No.
No! Excuse me for my voice cracking. No!
So
I'm sick as a dog.
Now,
it looks like
the strength of the Cavs right now is that they don't have to play their starters a ton of minutes. Their bench, there's been no drop-off. Like, from Darius Garland, who's been sensational.
Uh-huh.
It's been, like, no drop-off to Ty Jerome. And then they had lineups yesterday with no Darius and no Donovan Mitchell. They didn't lose a step. So that's been their strength. But what if it comes to it in those pivotal games in the Cup? Are you...
Yes.
Are you playing Donovan Mitchell 42 minutes?
Yes.
If you need to.
Yes.
Because the whole goal was not to wear him out. That was what was going to be different about this year.
Things change. And can I play him 42 minutes and then rest him after?
Maybe that's why they have lowered his minutes so far to get him ready.
To get ready for this?
There you go.
The cup.
That's a great point.
It's the Emirates NBA Cup. That's the one you want to win, guys.
The one thing, and this is just how it works.
O'Brien.
This would obviously be
over
just
$500,000 per player.
Unlucky, but if a Cavs player goes down in a cup game.
Yeah, but
you know, in the final 3 minutes goes down and you lose them for the year and it was all to win the cup, you know the wrath is coming.
I mean,
for the organization.
The NBA Cup, though.
Is it?
Yes.
You want to be a competitive team. If it happens, it happens. It's not like the games don't count. The games count in the standings.
I know. They do. They absolutely do. Until you get to the finals.
The
final two games or what?
Semis in the finals.
Yeah, semis in the finals do not count.
Yeah, those are extra games. But those are games for a guy who Ty Jerome's making $2.5 million this year.
That's right. He'll care. Yeah.
To go get another $500,000.
That's true.
Well, I'd be more comfortable.
The Ty Jerome classic, I have a feeling.
I'd be more comfortable letting Ty Jerome let it all hang out than Donovan Mitchell. I'm sorry. I was under the impression that the semifinals and the finals games counted. I did not know
that. That's what's weird. Nobody knows because it's only been 1 year of this.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted the NBA to stick with it for I think if the NBA just sticks with it, eventually these games will matter more. And I do think they're going to put some sort of priority, some playoff priority. Like maybe you get to pick your opponent in the first round. Something crazy. I know there's a lot of flaws to whatever you come up with. It'll devalue something. But it's to increase the value of this. That's the whole point of this. And I like the fact they know that fans in Europe do care about this stuff because that's what they modeled it after. And those teams in Europe and those tournaments that they have in Europe make a lot of money. And that's what the NBA wants to do. They want to make money. And so they're banking on something like this over time becoming a lot more important. So you have the teams take it seriously. Then eventually the fans will. I just don't know if by year two they will.
But in those final two games, see, damn it, I thought that they counted, if they counted it. But $500,000 each. I mean, Ty Jerome, you know what? No, I'll tell you why you got to go for the gusto when we come back.